take, let us assume, a third toke. Long and slow, you vaporize, and you take it in and in and in, and there is a sound like the crumpling of a plastic bread wrapper, or the crackling of the flame, and a tone,
Alright, you're listening to Kootenai Co-op Radio 93.5 FM CJLY, broadcasting live from Nelson and over the World Wide Web on www.kootenaicooperadio.com.
There is a cheer. The gnomes have learned a new way to say who.
Alright, welcome. This is Fane of the Cosmos.
Infinite Moment.
And I'm one of your hosts, Dustin Sunflower.
I'm another one of your hosts, Reverend DeMuzio.
And on today's show, we're going to be talking about Easter orgies.
Oh yeah, and all kinds of other stuff.
Hemp beer.
And other stuff.
And who can ever forget the delicious, the ever-delectable rabbit stew. Ha, 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 ha.
Unless we forget the other stuff, we're also going to have some news items. We're going to talk about, a big resurgence in free trade. People out there, the big government movers and shakers, trying to oppress us once again with their international trade laws. And they want to even go so far as banning vitamin C. So we'll talk about that later in the show.
Vitamin C.
You're going to be buying it from your dealer on the corner.
Oh, boy. And also, we'll be covering a recent auction on maps where all kinds of psychedelic goodies are going to be sold. Stay tuned. What else, Dan? Come on.
Well, I thought we'd break into the whole thing and just sort of talk about what's going on with the Easter sex and drugs stuff. I want to talk first about Christian Reich's research. Now, Reich is a university professor in Germany, and interestingly, just as sort of like a small tidbit or taste of what's coming
later
in the show.
Orgies?
There's orgies in there, yeah.
Okay.
What Reich did is he took a look at the worship of the Germanic goddess Ostara, and found that the ancient worshippers of her religion, which would celebrate her around Easter time with the drinking of a hemp brew that was, it's basically a beer made with cannabis. And I guess this is originally the way that the beer was made with cannabis, and the reason for that is because the alcohol in the beer carboxylizes the active ingredient and makes it psychedelic. So without either you have to use alcohol or you have to use heat. And what they would do is they would drink this beer, and then they would quaff, they would quaff a bunch of, beer right after they were eating these rabbits. And this is where we get
the rabbits of Easter.
They have a big rabbit feast at Easter in honor of Ostara, and then drink this hemp brew. And this is where we get the Easter bunny from. It's interesting.
So stay tuned. We're going to find out more about munching bunnies.
Oh, wait a second.
And
no,
all kinds of goodies.
We forgot to mention the communal lovemaking that happens right after that.
Okay, that's coming. That's under the subtitle orgy. Okay, now I'd like to thank all the people in Nelson who take care of our sorry asses here at the Fane of the Cosmos. Here we go. This show contains material which may be offensive to some rabbits. So if you have big ears, you might want to turn the dial. Because in this show, we're going to be talking about all kinds of crazy stuff. Sex, drugs, violence, rock and roll, the Bible. all kinds of goodies. So if you're a delicate listener, please turn your dial now, because the show must go on and we don't want to offend anybody. So this is your warning.
Now, one thing I don't like about America is we got real bad drug policy. We got horrible drug policy, man. We got people in jail for getting high. For getting high, man. That's fucked up, man. And the government always says drugs are illegal because they're bad for you and we're trying to protect society. But the government don't give a fuck about your safety. They sell guns at Walmart. They don't give a fuck about you. Shit. Nah, the government's like this. The government, they don't want you to use your drugs, they want you to use their drugs. So every night on TV, you see a weird-ass drug commercial trying to get you hooked on some legal shit. And they just keep naming symptoms till they get one that you fucking got, okay? It's like, are you sad? Are you lonely? You got athlete's foot? Are you hot? Are you cold? What you got? You want this pill, huh, motherfucker? You got to take this pill. They don't even tell you what the pill does. You see a lady on a horse or a man in a tub, and they just keep naming symptoms. Are you depressed? Are you lonely? Do your teeth hurt? What the fuck? I saw a commercial the other day that said, do you go to bed at night and wake up in the morning? Oh, shit, they got one. I got that. I'm sick. I need that pill. The government trying to get you hooked on some legal fucking shit. And that's the truth, man. Shit, the reason coke and weed are illegal in America don't got shit to do with your safety. The reason coke and weed are illegal in America is because the best coke and weed ain't made in America. If they made the good shit here, there'd be a coke and weed restaurant on every fucking corner. That's right. Wouldn't be no Starbucks. It'd be Weed Bucks. McDonald's, McCocos. Give me a Happy Meal and an 8-Ball. Thank you. Krispy Kreme's Cracky Cream. Yo, that's how good Krispy Kreme donuts are. Krispy Kreme donuts are so good. If I told you right now they had crack in it, you go, I knew something was up. I know. These donuts are too damn good, man. Got me knocking on the donut window at 2 o'clock in the morning. Come on, man, open up, man. Give me one more donut. I'll do anything. I'll suck your dick.
All right, welcome back. That was a little bit of Chris Rock. Just to start off the show.
Chris Rock will suck your cock.
Oh, boy. For a Krispy Kreme.
Oh, man. It's a funny guy, though.
So, Easter, Dan. Let's talk about Easter.
Okay, let's launch into our Easter discussion.
Yeah, I'm just gonna say the first thing that comes to my mind. Easter. What the heck does that word mean?
Well, it's derived from the name of the fertility goddess Oster, or Ostara. And we've taken this wholesale, this whole Easter thing, and turned it into a Christian holiday, when previously it was, you know, really a pagan holiday. And Easter is celebrated in pretty much every ancient religion, and it's celebrated. There's a lot of similar sort of attributes to its celebration in all of these different cultures.
Wow. Okay, eggs. Now what's the next thing you think of at Easter? Eggs?
Well, there's eggs. You know, that's about the first thing you think of. But eggs play a common role, and again, in the celebrations throughout, you know, all time, they play a. And why don't we name a few of the different celebrations that happen in the ancient cultures? In Greece, we have the ancient celebration of Persephone and Hades. And we'll talk more about that later. We'll talk about some of the stories later. And we have, and then we have, you know, in Egypt, we have the flood, the Nile flood ceremonies that happen right before the floods, which bring the fertility to the land. And in ancient Babylonia, we have the worship of Tammuzi and Inanna and their whole thing. Now, the interesting common thread that binds all of these together is love poetry, stories of sex, and stories of intoxication. And previously, you know, if you take a look on the internet, you'll see that
before the sex, right?
What?
Intoxication.
Yeah, you get
before
high first. Yes.
Get high first. Okay, good.
And it, specifically because these you know, euphoric drugs and substances are also thought of as aphrodisiacs. And also this is why they become so popular in funerary ceremonies, because the idea behind a funerary ceremony in most of these cultures is that not only do you just die, and especially around Easter time, it's about rebirth.
Mm-hmm.
So when you see, for example, in an ancient tomb, you may see there'll be like some lotus flowers or something like that, motifs on the walls. There may be, they found in the tomb of one pharaoh, they found some ancient threads that was part of a hempen cloth that they found in there. And they also found that some of the mummies were embalmed partially with cannabis. Now, all of these things are part of a larger pattern that the dead are fed, you know, psychedelics that, and the larger pattern, what it points towards is that they want to basically bring in as much fertility as they can, energy of fertility as they can to the dead.
Mm-hmm.
so as to promote rebirth. One of the things they used to do is they used to actually mold the mummy's phallus into a permanently erect position, or what they call ithophallic position.
Mm-hmm.
And this whole thing, this was all about bringing fertility energy to the dead for rebirth.
I saw that at the British Museum when I was there. Mummies, not the actual mummies themselves, but sarcophaguses and stuff, but datura flowers were on casks and tombs.
Yeah, it's really
interesting. Yeah,
you'll see this in cultures throughout the world, and
angel trumpets.
It seems to me people really overlook it, and
I know ours is so morose. We wear black. We throw you in a box. Like in other cultures, you know, the dead guy's got a boner. People are dressed up in flowers. People are celebrating because they know death, life, death, rebirth. Like Christ had to die in order for Christ to arise again. Like arise again. No, but like in order, you know, death, rebirth, it's all part of the cycle. In our culture, everything's just hidden away. We don't want to know about that. That death, it's dark. It's,
well, this is sort of something that originally I just looked at enough information from all over the place, and I sort of pieced together that this is what was going on. But previously, no other researcher has hit on this. And to me, it's surprising that people haven't realized that there is this connection that it you know, that the presence of cannabis in the tomb of a pharaoh has a very symbolic meaning, that it's there for a reason, and that the similar motifs that occur in cultures throughout the world are all there to bring on this rebirth. And this all has to do with Easter.
So there was actual cannabis resin in the mummies,
on
their ethnophallus or whatever, erecto. What did you call it?
They call it ithophallic, basically. It just means ever erect.
Oh, okay.
But the
Ramses, right?
I believe it was Ramses, yeah.
Ramses.
And the interesting part, what I'm getting to here is that what I'm drawing here is the strength that exists in the connection between Easter and drug taking and sexuality and rebirth. All of these motifs are central to the idea of what Easter is.
Mm-hmm.
And we're really missing that today. We're not, you know, a lot of us just think it's about, you know, it's like a
chocolate rabbits, painting eggs,
yeah.
Easter egg hunt. What else?
And what's it all about? Well, the rabbit also is a symbol of fertility. And, you know, screwing like a rabbit, we don't just say that because, you know, because rabbits, you know, we say that specifically because rabbits like to screw. We don't say it because they like to lie around lazily doing nothing.
Yeah.
And so anyways, we got the horny rabbits. We got the eggs, which are also a symbol of fertility, an ancient symbol of fertility, and all of these things, again, pointing towards that same thing.
Mm-hmm.
And while we're talking about Christ, why don't we also talk about Attis?
Who's that?
Now, interestingly, St. Peter's is found upon the ruins of the Temple of Attis. And I often kind of wondered, why are the priests so concerned with, you know, this whole notion of being celibate? Well, at Attis, and this could be part of the reason, Attis was known as the castrated god. Attis was self-castrated because in the ancient myth about Attis, he's the god, the lover of a goddess, and he gets raped by this she demon beast, and then feeling guilt, I guess, over the fact that he has allowed himself to be ravished in this way, and he feels this is a betrayal towards his lover, he chops off his own lingam, and that's it. Well, so all the priests of Attis did the same thing. They used to do it on the right around Easter at the time they called Black Friday, not Good Friday, Black Friday. And there was this big ritual where all the priests who were newly consecrated would chop off their lingams as a part of, you know, or their they would castrate themselves. So they wouldn't just chop off their lingams. They would, okay. Some of them probably would, but, you know, hard to say exactly. But mostly it was, you know, it was self-mutilation of the male genitals.
Whoa.
And
that's nuts.
Those who survived would then go on to become priests.
Great.
So this is where we get our Now, I don't know where the drugs are involved in that. I'm sure that if you dug deep enough, you might find that there was some euphoric present. Probably you'd want to be kind of high if you were going to lop off a part of your genitals.
Mm-hmm. Whoa, man. Both announcers are breathing heavily. Okay.
Yes.
Thank God, Black Friday. I'm not going to be part of that. I'm going to be part of Good Friday.
But, you know, there's a lot of things that are coming together here, you know. To get specifically to the heart of the drug-taking traditions that are involved with Easter, we have, for example, you know, we can go all the way back to ancient Babylon, and we can talk about Dumuzi, who is an archetype along with, you know, very along the lines of Osiris.
And that's what you're named after? That's your handle?
Yeah. So Dumuzi is, you know, is this ancient Babylonian god, and he's a resurrection god. He rises again every year, and this again is important because it's a part of the thematic thing that happens at Easter time. So we have Dumuzi, the resurrected god. We have Osiris from Egypt, the resurrected god, and there's various other ones like Dionysus, who's a resurrected god, and we have Persephone, who's a resurrected goddess, and she's also celebrated. All of them celebrated at Easter. Kali also has celebrations around spring. And it's a motif that it's not just Christianity. We don't just get this, oh, the resurrected Jesus, you know, at Easter time. Well, that the Christians didn't make that up. That didn't just come out of the Bible. That came out of ancient myths that are way older than the Bible.
Wow.
We have Dumuzi. Let's talk about him. Now, there's some ancient love poetry traditions that people, you know, scholars basically figure all sort of arise from a similar source. And the one with Dumuzi and Inanna, there's a specific hymn, and it's very common in this love poetry for the gods and goddesses to be referred to as psychedelic substances. And here's one in which Inanna is Saint Dumuzi. She says, "He has sprouted, he has burgeoned, he is lettuce planted by the water. He is the one my womb loves best." And now, lettuce in this area was actually psychedelic. It had a sort of a soporific effect. It was also thought to be an aphrodisiac.
It even has, I think it's a sativa, even, isn't it? No, lactuva verosa. No, lactuva verosa. Anyway, I can't remember the Latin name, but yeah, it's the milky substance of the lettuce.
There's some interesting syncretism that happens here because a lot of these gods also are associated with the bull. We have Dumuzi associated with the bull, Dionysus associated with the bull, also Min associated with the bull, and Min is an Egyptian god, and he is celebrated in what is commonly, well, around spring equinox. Now it's kind of complex because Egyptian the actual spring is around the summer solstice. That's when the Nile floods, and so they have a slightly different summertime and cycle. But Min, for some reason, is celebrated, who's a fertility god, is celebrated at the spring equinox. Now, Min is associated with lettuce, like I said, which is psychedelic, and he's also a fertility god, and he's also a bull god like Dumuzi and Dionysus. So that's just another interesting synchronistic point. We're going to go now to Egypt. Now, Egypt has also quite interesting, quite beautiful love poetry. And here's one. I'm just going to read this. The one, the sister who has no equal, more beautiful than all the rest. To look on her is to see the star that rises at the beginning of a good year. Her hair is veritable lapis lazuli. Her arms surpass any gold, and her fingers are like lotus buds. Now, the lotus buds are a very powerful psychedelic image from Egypt, and mentioning them is very important in this poem because they are they're woven into Egyptian myth so deeply. And one example of this is you can find in it's E.A.E. Raymond's book. And he talks about the temples and the foundings of the temples. And there's a special kind of like a ritual that's done at the founding of the temple. And we'll get into that more later. But the ritual is associated with an ancient myth about the beginning of the world. And the beginning of the world is when the myth goes that the primeval ones are standing on the sacred mound, and they dip their combined phalluses into the Nun, which is the primeval waters of existence, and thus they create the world. But before they do that, they take the lotus. So the lotus again, and the lotus is also fed to the deceased in hopes of course, ensuring a rebirth, a favorable rebirth in Egypt. So here we are going through the love poetry, and there's so many different things I could tie in here, and I could, but we'll just go on to the next love poetry, which is the Bible, the Song of Songs from the Book of Solomon. And I'll read you that one. A garden enclosed is my sister, my spouse, a spring shut up, a fountain sealed. Thy plants are an orchard of pomegranates with pleasant fruits, campfire, spikenard, and saffron, cannabis, and cinnamon. With all trees of frankincense, myrrh, and aloes, with all the chief spices. So interesting here that the cannabis is mistranslated as calamus in the common biblical text. And this is a well-known fact now. It's been brought out again and again by Chris Bennett, has actually popularized it, although he builds on the research of a lot of other people who have extensive credentials as linguists and scholars. So it's a very convincing argument. And once again, we have, you know, we have the lovers being mentioned as a psychedelic substance. And now, interestingly, pomegranates are mentioned not only in the Bible, but they're also mentioned in Egyptian love poetry, and they're mentioned in the ancient Sumerian love poetry. So I was kind of wondering what that was all about. I took a look at it, and I found out that pomegranates are actually used to make wine in these areas. And this wine was commonly spiced, and I would suggest it was possibly spiced with cannabis, because cannabis is probably the very best thing to put into an alcoholic drink because of its the way that it just works so well. It carboxylates and it gets really stony.
Well, what's the legend with the one pomegranate seed? Hades and Persephone, right? Isn't that it?
Yeah, and then that brings us back to Greece, which is the one other place that we haven't mentioned yet, and that's the story of Persephone and Hades. So Persephone is out strolling in the garden, and she comes across this beautiful narcissus flower, and when she picks it up from the broken earth, pops Hades, and he grabs her and he brings her down into his underworld domain, and he. The myth goes that he rapes her, but now in those times, rape could mean that he seduced her and made love to her without consent of her parents. But as a part of this whole thing, he also tricks her into eating a pomegranate seed.
Which he'd been warned against. Like, whenever you're down there, never accept a meal, you know, when you're with the spirits.
Well, when her mother, Demeter, gets really upset and stops the seasons from turning and stuff, and winter comes and all this stuff, she's really upset. She's a fertility goddess. She has control of this stuff, so she kind of puts the hold on it until the other gods get it together enough to tell her what happened. So finally she learns, well, you know, her daughter was abducted and went down to Hades. So she says, okay, well, I want her back. So Persephone is resurrected. But on the condition, she's allowed to come back on the condition she didn't eat anything down there. Well, she had this one seed. So this one seed dooms her to forever return to the underworld. And then she rises again. And this is what makes her a resurrection deity. Mm-hmm. So the pomegranate seed is emblematic of that. But the pomegranate seed also was, at the time amongst the Greeks, was considered to be a symbol of... how should we say it? Kind of like drunken licentiousness. In other words, you know, you were considered to be kind of a slut if you associated yourself with the pomegranate.
Well, the pomegranate, too, they used to call it Satan's fruit because it was red and it had the crown on the top and red seeds inside and lust and the red dust and all that stuff.
Yeah. But you know, it's kind of interesting because... There's a child born as a part of this whole Persephone and Hades thing, the lesser ceremonies, the lesser mysteries, and the greater mysteries. The lesser mysteries happen in the spring equinox, and the greater mysteries happen later in the year, kind of, you know. And a part of these mysteries is the bringing forth of a child, and this child is thought by many scholars to be Dionysus, who is associated with the magic mushrooms and with wine, and the wine, of course, which comes from the pomegranates and all that stuff, right? Yeah. Well, we also have the theory from Road to Eleusis, Gordon Wasson, that says that basically Wasson speculated that these fellers were, you know, would get really high on this stuff they called Kikion, which was like a psychedelic brew containing ergot, or basically it's like an LSD.
Claviceps purpurea.
Yeah.
The lysergide soaked fungi that grew on the grains to make the brew, for used in the brewing and fermentation.
Totally. And so it's kind of cool, you know, you kind of think about it. It's like, you know, these guys would get really high, and then there would be like a culmination ceremony where they would, you know, they'd bring all this symbolic stuff out and they would kind of show it to you. And this was the mystery, and you were never allowed to repeat it on pain of death. But some people did kind of repeat stuff, and eventually some of the stuff did make it into historical accounts that we have access to today. And so we know that there, you know, some of the details about what these mysterious elements, you know, these things they were showing people were. So here they are, all stoned out of their minds in the temple. And, you know, and as you can imagine, the way that it's described in Frogs, anyways, which is an ancient Greek poem, is that the light of this star is shining in, and, you know, they come forth with this, you know, this basically casket, and they open it up and show you all the things in there. Well, what's in there is seed cakes. It's kind of in the shape of like a yoni and a lingam, you know, so the male and female genitalia. So you're like, wow, hey, that's all about death and rebirth. You know, the seeds are harvested and made into something that is emblematic of rebirth. So there's the death and the rebirth right there in front of your face. And of course, you know, the grains too are associated with Dionysus. So then when they bring out the baby, you know, and it's like, this is the lady Persephone with her newborn child. The baby, Dionysus, is again, once again, you know, evokes this idea of generation and regeneration. And it's very cool.
All right. Well, we'll come back. Maybe when we get back, should we talk more about the ingredients of these brews?
We could. I think.
Or what do we got? What other cultures have we got to cover here?
Well, I want to tie it up a bit more. Why don't we tie it up a bit more after the break? We'll talk about cannabis's relationship to the pyramids.
Oh, okay. Perfect. This is Bill Hicks.
I was over in Australia during Easter, which was interesting. Interesting to note, they celebrate Easter the same way we do, commemorating the death and resurrection of Jesus by telling our children a giant bunny rabbit left chocolate eggs in the night. Now, I wonder why we're fucked up as a race. Anybody got any clues out there? Where do you get this shit from, you know? Why those two things, you know? Why not goldfish left Lincoln Logs in your sock drawer, you know? And as long as we're making shit up, go hog wild, you know? At least a goldfish with a Lincoln Log on its back going across your floor to your sock drawer has a miraculous connotation to it. Mummy, I woke up today and there was a Lincoln Log in my sock drawer. That's the story of Jesus. Who comes up with this shit? I've read the Bible. I can't find the word bunny or chocolate anywhere in that fucking book.
Welcome back. You're listening to Fane of the Cosmos, Infinite Moment. You're on 93.5 FM, CJLY. We're broadcasting live from Nelson and over the worldwide mycelium on www.kootenaycopradio.com. And if you're one of the large lake livers, you're listening to 96.5 FM. Also on the internet, downloadable each week is a copy of our radio show on www.radio4all.net. That's an archive of the radio show. Anywhere. You can download it if you're listening on the web right now. We're back with Easter orgies, hemp beer, and rabbit stew. The true history of Easter.
So I guess we're going to talk now about the relationship, what's happening in Egypt, the Egyptian Easter specifically. It's really interesting because around Easter, the prostitutes and some of the single women and even some of the men all load into boats and float around on the newly flooded Nile. Now, it's not specifically Easter there, because it's not around the spring equinox, but it is their spring, which is closer to the summer solstice. And if you can imagine, right around this time of year, the star Sirius is rising just before the sun. And so this is kind of their forebearer. They associate Sirius with Isis. And these are all festivals, and they also associate Isis with Hathor Tefnut. Now, these are all festivals in honor of Hathor Tefnut, the great mother. And so they're floating about on their boats, and they're drinking all kinds of beer and getting really high. And
sounds like Kootenay Lake, but like...
not quite. I mean, it's a little too cold out on Kootenay Lake for some of these activities, but they're baring their breasts and engaging in sexual acts and just basically stirring everybody into a heightened frenzy.
They're purifying the Nile. They're like saying, yeah, they're just celebrating the fertility of the waters and the planting of seeds.
And, there's interesting correlations between that and what's happening for the pharaoh, and there's some indications that possibly, like they did at the Step Ziggurat, that in Babylon, that the pharaoh at this point would engage in some kind of a fertility ritual with the high priestess or with his queen in the pyramids. And there's even a more interesting correspondence, and I want to get into the cannabis connection, because what we were talking about earlier, we were talking about how the especially with the way that the temples were built, and when the temples were built, the pharaoh would go out into the place where it was going to be built, and he would sort of survey it basically with a cord, and he would lay out the cardinal directions and stuff. In order to do this, he would call on the aid of the goddess Seshat. Now, the goddess Seshat is a very interesting goddess because she's associated with cannabis, probably more strongly than any other goddess in Egyptian mythology or god in Egyptian mythology. And the reason for that is because her symbol represents the cannabis leaf. It looks more than anything like a cannabis leaf. It's got the very stylized seven-point leaf, and if you look at certain depictions of it, you'll see that the bottom two leaves are shorter than the ones at the top, and it looks exactly like a cannabis leaf.
Variegated to the little edges on the leaves, yeah.
Well, it's hilarious that, like, we have scholars who, for the past, I don't know how many years, have been trying to say that this thing's a star, which it isn't. The star in ancient Egypt is depicted with 5 points, or that it's some kind of flower, who knows which kind, but it's obvious what it is, and it's been obvious what it is for, you know, as long as people have known what a cannabis leaf looks like. So the goddess Seishat, whose sacred tools include the rope, which is used to measure and lay out the pyramid, is associated with cannabis. Now, the rope itself is also made from cannabis, and if you look at the pyramid texts, it says specifically that that's what they use to make this rope. So we, you know, another association. You would assume that because the laying out of the temple is so closely related to the creation of the creation of the world mythology, that if the gods who created the world got high before they did that, that you would expect then that probably the pharaoh would also get high. So this connection with Seishat is really telling that there is this, you know, there is some indication of a psychedelic drug. Perhaps cannabis was used.
In what form?
Probably, I mean, like, it's hard to say exactly what form it was used in then. We do know, though, that the Egyptians had a cannabis perfume, which they called the perfume of the pharaohs. And this perfume was likely used, hard to say if it was used specifically at the temple-making thing. I would almost think that they would use a drink of some kind for the temple thing. But just intuitively, I don't have any evidence of that. But as far as the use of this perfume goes, that was used during the king-making ceremonies, probably. Because if you take a look at the Song of Songs and the Bible, there's extensive evidence that a cannabis ointment was used to anoint the kings and priests.
Mm-hmm.
So chances are...
Maybe an oil, some kind of dermal application, or even rubbing the whole body in oils, maybe.
Yeah, and you know, this isn't just a speculation. They've actually, you know, L'Oreal did research on what the perfume of the pharaohs was. They had a sample, a really ancient sample, and they analyzed it and found that there was cannabis in there.
Wow.
So there's no question. And it lends further support to the interpretation of the biblical text, which says that calamus was, that, you know, mistranslated, that the cannabis was mistranslated as calamus in the Song of Songs. And I think really strong extra support for that.
Nice.
So we go from this whole thing about the mounds, the primeval mound, and I want to ask, like, where is this primeval mound? What happened to this primeval mound? Well, it turns out that there's a mound below the Great Pyramid, and you know, the people who've kind of looked into this, scholars think that this is the primeval mound that's referred to in the creation text, that this is the very beginning. You know, this is where Egyptian civilization got its start, was on this mound. This is their most sacred site. That's why they built the pyramid on top of it. That's why they went to the trouble of building the pyramid in such a way that they didn't level the mound first. They took it into account and built over it.
That's what the Mayans do too. Mexicans.
It's really interesting that they would do that. Because they, I mean, these are people who can move, you know, several tons of brick, but they're leaving a mound in place, you know?
Yeah.
For a reason, obviously.
Yeah.
The pyramids are oriented to the cardinal directions, which means that at the spring equinox, the side of the pyramid is totally lit up. They're also oriented to the meridians. So when the stars in the sky pass over it, they pass over it, you know, totally... sort of like perpendicular, just along the line of the pyramid. It's really cool. And there's shafts in the pyramid which point to various stars. One of the stars they point to is Sirius, which again, is, if you remember, is important to the Nile flood. So the pyramids, in a sense, are partly timing the equinoxes. They also time the solstices. I think it's possible, and now we're sort of treading into the realm of some pretty deep speculation, but I think it's possible that with the way that the pyramid is oriented and the fact that it's on top of the mound, that the pyramids were used in a sex drugs celebration at Easter time. I mean, they mark Easter. They're on top of the mound where the gods and goddesses would, you know, the primeval gods took psychedelic substances before creating the world. And if you ask me, I think it would be pretty unlikely that they wouldn't have been involved in some kind of ritual that was meant to bring fertility to the land. So that does it for that. Why don't we play a song or something, Dustin? We'll talk about something.
Okay. I want to talk about hemp beer.
Hemp beer some more?
Yeah.
Okay.
And we can talk about the Bavarian purity laws.
Oh, yeah, that's really cool, yeah.
We should talk about that next. Stay tuned. Hemp beer and the reason why it's making a resurgence in North America. Now, I'm telling you right now, I don't know what's on this CD, but I'm just going to play the first track. Here we go. Okay, there's nothing on that CD, so that should make it really easy for me not to put that on. Okay, we're gonna play a little bit of. Since we're on a Bugs Bunny theme, we'll play. This is Bugs and Elmer Fudd by Cheech and Chong, but before that, there's something. Here we go.
Pretty good trick, Doc. But can you do this? All right, Fudsy. This will be a take, see?
Gilda Wabbit, Gilda Wabbit, Gilda Wabbit.
Suffering succotash. That sounds worse than a Tweety Bird in a blender. You gotta get with the times, Elmer. Here, try it like this. Don't you mess with me. I'm a super wabbit killer. I'm bad, you see. I'm Elmer Fudd. I own a mansion and a yacht. And all the widow ladies dig what I got. I'm armed to the teeth and I can't be beat. I'm a crazy old mother for wabbit meat. All the wabbits I catch say pay me cash. So hey, screwy wabbit, better cover your ass. I'm wappin', I'm wappin'. No wabbit's gonna catch me nappin'. I think that before I get much thinner, I'll be taking you home with me for dinner. See, I have this recurring fantasy of using you in one of my recipes. You let all the success go straight to your head, but it's fattening you up, so I'll be well fed. You're a dried-up, squirrely old fat Welsh wabbit with a $2,000 a day carrot habit. I'm whapping, and nothing's gonna catch me napping. You're gonna wish you were a specimen in the zoo, cause it's all over, wabbit, I'm coming for you. I wear a honey-type chemise and I carry a gun, and I'll blow your brains out just for fun. You could hide anywhere, you could hide in the sewer, but you're gonna wind up at the end of my store. You think you're hot, but much hotter you'll be when you're a batter-dipped wabbit quite quicker. See, I'm whapping, and nothing's gonna catch me. Ooh. Oh, oh, well, Fufferin' fuckin' hash, how'd he get in here?
Break a back a firecracker! 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 This is Boomba!
you think you're the Pope, or is your brain fried out on chintzy dope? What's the secret here, Fuzzy? Have you got some serum that makes you all short and fat and gruesome? You chased me through the woods for 50 years, shooting everything with floppy ears. Chasing after me has caused a big sensation, the Elmer Fudd method of vegetation. I'm going to the rabbit club to quaff a few, so here's the last thing I'm gonna say to you. Take your mansion and your broken down yacht, and kiss my sweaty old rabbit jaw. Ain't I a stinker? What a maroon.
Gee, Fuzzy, you wanna try nothing again when you're feeling better, son?
Oh, shut up, you rotten old pussycat. I'll get you tooth on you. This is a wet
All right. Bugs Bunny shenanigans.
All right, Dusty.
So in tune with our Easter show.
You wanted to talk about orgies and beer, right?
Orgies and beer. If you're listening this Sunday, this is a repeat of the Sunday show of March 20th. This is an Easter special repeat. So,
well, it's not a repeat yet, but it will be.
It will be.
And someone will be listening to me saying it's not a repeat yet.
Yeah, so come here. So hemp beer. What culture does the hemp beer? It's German, right? The hemp beer scene.
That's right. We're talking about research that was done by Christian Reich, and
I love that guy.
He writes a great book, Marijuana Medicine, and if you read that book, you'll find that he talks about this stuff extensively.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, it's interesting because the Germanic fertility goddess Freya is honored with cannabis as a sacrament. And there's lots of other ways that cannabis is used around Easter time by the ancient Germans, and according to Christian Reich. One of the things they did apparently was they would take the stalks and they would shoot them at the sky to scare away winter.
Nice.
On Easter, spring equinox. They would also feed cannabis seeds to their hands in the wintertime so that their hands would continue to lay eggs. And it's possibly, you know, this is an interesting connection between eggs and cannabis, but it's just possibly simply because cannabis is so nutritious. Cannabis seeds are so nutritious that they promote fertility. And you need to have good nutrition in order to promote fertility. So.
And we're back to the eggs again.
And back to the eggs. Now, the cannabis orgies were, of course, outlawed by the Catholic Church, you know, unfortunately. But what they would do is they would take the cannabis, like we said earlier, and they would make it with a beer, and they would get really drunk, and they would kill and eat a bunch of rabbits, and they would get really drunk, and then they would get involved into a big collective orgy. And part of suppressing this whole pagan celebration that happened around Easter in the Germanic areas was the Bavarian Purity Act of 1516.
Okay, but now these beers didn't just have hemp in them. They also had henbane and a bunch of other herbs and spices that were added to this kind of aphrodisiacal concoction that was like, it was more than a brew. It was like Jägermeister, or, you know, like it was like some, it was more than just your average hemp beer. Like nowadays, down at the store, you can get hemp 20 brew. I mean, not hemp 20, God, 420 ale, you know, yeah, from Shaftesbury. Like they're starting to put the hemp back into beer.
Yeah, but it's not the psychedelic.
But it's not psychedelic. But I mean, the idea is there, right? Like,
yeah,
it's starting to come back into the beer. The Bavarian purity laws out the door, and so we're starting to get back. But it wasn't just hemp; it was also other goodies like henbane and you know, different herbs and spices that would help you get that Easter feeling.
Well, another interesting connection, too, is the fact that we now have the placebo sacrament of the chocolate rabbit. Well, it turns out that, you know, chocolate has a lot of cannabinoids in it. And so what better replacement substance, euphoric substance, for cannabis but chocolate?
Totally. So these Bavarian purity laws. We have beer that had all these goodies in it for aphrodisiacs and stuff, and then comes along the Bavarian purity laws. What were they?
Well, we should maybe first of all talk about them today. It's very interesting that there's a lot of breweries today who you sort of uphold their beer's purity because it conforms to the Bavarian Purity Act of 1516, you know, and if you read the back labels, and if you're a beer connoisseur, you'll know what I'm talking about. But the fact is that the Bavarian Purity Act of 1516 was a part of the church's witch hunt, and was a way of sanitizing, culturally sanitizing beer, ancient beers, and basically making them fit for Christian consumption.
Boring brew.
Yeah. As a way of basically destroying an ancient cultural celebration that happened around Easter.
Mm-hmm. So here we have the super aphrodisiac, intoxicating, psychedelic brew, all of a sudden, thanks to this purity law, turning into just regular ales. And thereby stamping out the use of cannabis, stamping out the use of these herbs and medicines. And so, yeah, really nice way for the church to crack down on these pagan ceremonies. Under these guys, that just drives me nuts. Purity laws. It's crazy.
Yeah, it's sad. It's funny whenever you hear that word purity too. You think racial purity. You think racial hygiene.
Feels. And I remember reading that on beer labels, the Bavarian Purity Laws of 1516. You know, and you're like, wow, this is a tradition. But then when you read about the tradition, you're like, wait a second. You mean this beer might have actually, you know, might have had other goodies in it, but they cut them out.
Well, you gotta wonder, like, today purity laws tend to relate to, you know, keeping chemical pollutants and a whole bunch of nasty crap that you would never want in your foods, out of your foods, you know?
But that's it.
But back then they didn't have that, so what were
psychic
they trying to keep out?
Purity. Psychedelic purity. We wouldn't want any of our Christian friends getting high.
Yeah.
That's totally crazy.
So, Dustin, is there anything else you want to know about Easter?
So we've covered the Bavarian purity laws. What else? The Easter rabbits. Chocolate.
Well, we talked about chocolate.
I know, but
you want to talk about chocolate some more? You like
listeners,
chocolate.
Listeners, put up your ears.
Send
if
us
you want
chocolate.
To hear more about chocolate.
Send Dustin chocolate.
Fane of the Cosmos is sponsored by chocolate. Chocolate.
And if you want, after the show, Dustin will give you his address and you can send him chocolate.
Literally, Dan and I have a chocolate ceremony before every show where we eat chocolate, and then that's how we start the show. So if this show is sponsored by Cocoa and the Cocoa Bean family, we'd like to thank you.
Okay, Dustin. Hey, no. Why don't we talk about another Easter tradition?
What's that?
There's more. There's another one. And it does involve getting really wasted. Oh. And in fact, it's a Jewish tradition. And it's called Purim.
Now, I know this one, buddy. Studied it in Hebrew school.
Well, the theme of the first modern Purim Carnival in Tel Aviv, held in 1912, was "Until One Doesn't Know," referring specifically to the desired level of wastedness to be reached during the celebration. And the Purim celebration sort of harkens back to the story of Esther. Now, Esther was kind of this really beautiful Jewish maiden who caught the eye of a very non-Jewish king.
She was in a contest, and he lined up all the most beautiful women in the land, and he picked the most beautiful. And
but
she
before he did
to
that,
be it.
But before he did that, he got really, really wasted. And he got wasted for a really long time. He was drunk for months, and drunk and stoned for months. And then he, his wife, I think, sort of insulted him, and he had her killed. That's why he needed to marry
get a new wife.
A new wife, yeah. So, but Esther really not only caught his eye, but caught his heart. And there's a great story. Esther is beside the king, and there's a procession, and Esther's uncle refuses to bow to the prime minister and the king. So the prime minister gets really pissed off, and he sees this as his opportunity to oppress the peoples, and he has Mordecai ordered to be executed.
Hamantaschen.
And so Esther, she's like, and she's like, okay, well, I got to do something to stop this awful thing. So she goes to the king and she explains the whole thing to him. And then the king is like, okay, well, he listens to her, which is really cool. And he orders the prime minister to be killed in his stead. And there's a whole drama that happens in there, but we won't get into all that. But it's interesting that this whole story, which involves this drunken feast and revelry and marriage ceremony, again is associated with Easter.
Mm-hmm. She's also, like, for me, was one of the first archetypal feminists, because she was like, he at one point in the story was like, where's my queen? I want my queen now. She's like, I'm not coming. He's like, I want my queen. Where's my queen? I'm going, and she's like, I'm not coming. And it was like, she was her own person. She was totally, like, strong in herself. And as a kid, reading this in the Torah, I was like, whoa, that's pretty, she's cool. Hamantaschen. And you eat Hamantaschen, the little cakes are triangle cakes, because they said that his ears were pointed.
I'm trying to remember, but was it his first wife, or was it her that refuses to dance for the...
Yeah, she's the one who refuses.
Refuses to dance.
Yeah. He doesn't kill her, though. But then one wild side shoot of this is because Hamantaschen is trying to kill off the Jewish people. It actually, if you work out numerically the letters in the story of Esther in the Bible, it adds up to 1946. And if you look, it's the exact date of the Nuremberg trials, where the exact same number of people who were hanged in the story of Esther was the exact same amount of people who were killed that day or were executed as part of the Nuremberg trials.
Right, because it wasn't just Mordecai's neck that was on the line. It was
all the whole Jewish people. Yeah, it was a conspiracy.
Right.
But it's wild how the numerology of the story winds in there. But anyway, that's a side
note
to Easter.
No, that's really neat.
But Purim, oh man, I used to love that holiday as a kid.
But again, isn't it interesting that Esther, her name is so similar to Easter?
Yeah.
And that this is all happening around this time. And it's a story. I think what's happening is we're seeing some very sort of archetypal story elements being sort of,
in all cultures. I'd like to find out one for the Mayan or South American cultures, what their Easter is about. You know what I mean?
I think, didn't they just rip the heart out of a virgin or something?
Yeah, whatever, buddy.
Can't remember.
Oh, God. No, listeners, we are thoroughly joking about that one. But yeah, I'm curious, because similar kinds of pyramids, similar, solstice, equinox, recognition. So there's got to be something in there. Well, maybe we can take a break and jump on the computer quickly and just see if we can find Mayan Easter ritual.
We can do something like that. But before we do that, let's wrap this conversation up with one final interesting note that's just, again, points to this sort of cross-cultural sex and drug celebration in Easter time, which is the fact that that all of these gods, as I said before, Tammuz, Adonis, Marduk, that they're all associated with the god Bel, whose name means Lord, and that the Celtic peoples used to celebrate the equinox with a big party called Beltane, where everyone would get really wasted and have lots of sex.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, let's go to